Hello, podcast listeners. You are currently listening to Stories Past, stories told to students by me, Blake Smith, over the last 30 years. And welcome back to Stories Past. This is my fourth episode of Stories Past, and I'm going to tell you what I consider my best story that I have. In this particular situation, we're going to be actually having a studio audience, because as you know, if you listen to my podcast, these are stories that I've told to students over the years. And therefore, in this particular case, I'm going to tell it to the students who are here with me. So there are three students in the room with me right now, and the rest of them are home. And we've invited them to jump in at any moment to ask questions about what's going on with this story, to kind of add to the story as we go along. And so they will feel free to jump in at any minute. I might have a guest coming in, but he has contacted me and it looks like he is not in service, so I might not have him, but we'll do the best we can with this. Okay, so the best story I have, and now this is a story about my grandfather, sort of. And my grandfather is actually right behind me, and he's right there. That's a picture of my grandfather. So that grandfather right there, his name is Blake Smith, Oscar Blake Smith, which of course is my name. And then his son is that person over there in the corner. That's my dad, John Lee Smith. And so that person, Blake Smith, was the Baptist minister of the University of Texas Baptist Church in the 40s and 50s in the University of Texas. My dad was also, he went to Yale Divinity School, got his degree in divinity, which is religion. My dad followed in his footsteps, also became a Baptist minister, also went to Yale Divinity School, had his own church for a while too, and then he went back to Yale and got his PhD sought his PhD in philosophy. So back to my grandfather. So the story about 5:05 p.m. is kind of a weird one, but the way it begins is that my grandfather as a minister was famous for a couple of things. And if you Google Blake Smith, University of Texas, it says civil rights leader, which is weird to me. I was like, I didn't know my grandfather was a civil rights leader, but it turns out that he took over the church in 1943. And I remember 1943, that's the middle of World War II, right? Yes, middle of World War II. And he proceeds to desegregate his church in 1940s in Texas, Austin, Texas. That means he allowed black people to come into his church. And in doing so, he created a lot of enemies and people, half of his church left. And I've spoken to my uncle recently, and my uncle claims that the senator of the state of Texas said that Blake Smith was the biggest communist in the state of Texas. The 1940s, because they would equate civil rights, the mixing of blacks and whites together, to communism. Okay, which doesn't make much sense, but it was the thing that was happening at this point. So my grandfather, that was what he's kind of famous for, and my grandfather also had a radio show. He was pretty well known for his writings, and he was part of this kind of Southern Baptist community, but was pretty radical for his time. In other words, allowing blacks to come into church with white people in the 40s. We're talking about Jackie Robinson's 47. Okay, so 4 years before Jackie. Brown versus Board is 54. Rosa Parks is 50 something. All right. So this is real early, and I was kind of even unaware of it, that my grandfather was that thing. But the reason I became aware of it, of course, is because I was the namesake. So when I was the fourth child of five, boy, and they wanted to name me Blake Smith. But the problem with that is if you name your son after one grandfather, you got to take the other grandfather in, or else you'll insult him. So my one grandfather's name was Clyde. His name was Furman Clyde Funderburk. And then my grandfather here is Oscar Blake Smith. So they wanted to name me Blake. So they were saying Blake, Clyde, Clyde, Blake. It didn't work. And so they added my dad's name. So my name is John, my dad, Clyde, my grandfather, Blake, my grandfather, Smith. Okay, that's where my name has come. But I've never been called John in my life. And I wouldn't even respond to Clyde. Okay. So that's kind of the origin. So when my grandfather, you know, so we kind of, I was aware of him. And my dad, you know, my dad was a minister. Well, he was a professor at Cornell. He taught at Cornell, and he was kind of the Baptist representative of Cornell for a while. And he was also involved in the civil rights movement in the 1960s. I grew up in Ithaca. You know, Cornell was kind of one of those civil rights places. So that was kind of my life. And one of the stories I'll tell you later is about my elementary school, which is kind of cool. It's a story in itself. But the story is about my grandfather. So my grandfather rarely ever visited us. I lived in Ithaca, New York. He lived in Austin, Texas. And back in the day, you know, planes were expensive and you just couldn't visit as easily. So I only remember my grandfather ever coming to my house twice. And so my grandfather comes to my house on in June of 1973. So I am 11 years old. All right. So he's visiting my house and he comes. It was a big deal and it was exciting to have my grandfather there. And my grandmother came too. But by this point, my grandfather had had heart attacks before. He'd been sick. He had had a couple heart attacks. And at this point, he had kind of retired and he had traveled all across the country and visited every single one of his sons. And my grandfather had four sons. And so he visited all of them, including, by the way, Riley, who is my son's namesake. Okay. So he visited all four. And it turns out that we were kind of the last one to visit. And my other uncle lived in Cortland. So I lived in Ithaca. They lived in Cortland. So it was good for him to visit. He saw his two different sons, all his grandchildren. And we're all kind of visiting. So that's a nice thing. And it turns out that it's my birthday. Okay. It's June 21st, 1973. And it's my birthday. And I don't remember too much of the planning, but I remember it was exciting because my grandfather was there. It was kind of different. And so the story goes that my dad worked at Cornell. And in Ithaca, everything is a hill. So it's kind of like Hartwick, kind of like Oneonta, everything's a hill. Ithaca is gorges, you know, and there's gorges coming out. And where my house was, you either went up a hill or you went down a hill. It's kind of the way it was. And my dad was going to a meeting at Cornell, and his office was about maybe 3/4 of a mile from my house, maybe a mile from my house, but it was basically straight up the hill. So my dad, and it was a beautiful day, and my dad and my grandfather say, well, I got a meeting. And my grandfather goes, well, I'll go with you. And he was going to meet, by the way, with all these theologians, a Jewish representative, the Muslim representative, the Hindu representative, all these different representatives who were kind of, I don't know if there's a Hindu, but there were different religions, Presbyterian, all the different ones. And so they're going up there to visit, to have this meeting. So my dad is walking up, and it is pretty steep. And my dad and my grandfather are coming up the hill, this beautiful curving hill at Cornell, and the office is right there. And the people in the meeting that they're going to look out the window like this, and they look out and they go, oh, look at that. Isn't that nice? Father and son walking arm in arm up the hill. And they go back to their meeting, and right then my grandfather has a heart attack, and he hits the floor right in front of this building. It goes down hard, boom. Now, my father was aware that my grandfather had heart problems. He knew kind of what to do. So they had nitroglycerin pills he used to have. He dug into his pocket and shoved them in his mouth and stuff. And it turned out that where the office was right across the street from what's called Gannett Clinic, which was the kind of the health center of Cornell. And so really quickly, they got people over there and they tried to revive him and everything. Now, I'm not aware of this. You know why I'm not aware? Because I'm a little kid and I'm at home on my 11th birthday, about a mile away or a half a mile away. So all I remember very vividly, which is kind of scary, it makes me scared now, is the sirens. Because I remember these sirens going up the hill, you know, going up, and then we didn't know what was going on. And then people kind of showed up at our house and told us. And remember, my grandmother is there, you know, and we don't know what's going on. This is crazy. So my grandfather, on my birthday, happy birthday to me, has a heart attack. And that was kind of the end of my enjoyment of my 11th birthday. So he goes to the hospital, and we all come back together. And my cousins come from Cortland. We all kind of got camp out in my house. And a couple of days go by. And he is not recovering. He's in a hospital in Ithaca. So finally, I can't remember the time period going by. It was kind of vague. But I remember at one point, it was June 23rd, 2 days later, and my dad answered the phone. And he put the phone down. And he said, your grandfather died at 5:05 p.m. Now, I say 5:05 p.m. My brother says 5. I've heard 5:15, but I'm pretty sure it was 5:05 p.m. So he knows that he is now dead. So we're all like, oh God, grandfather died. And now not only did he die, but he's in Ithaca, which is 1,500 miles away from where he's from. And he's a very well-respected Baptist minister with lots of friends and lots of other minister kind of people who know him and love him and stuff. So now what do we do, you know? So we're kind of in this situation. And back in those days, I'll get to that part later. But so me and my cousins go out. And in Ithaca is set up where Cayuga Lake sits, goes right down south. And at the south end of Cayuga Lake is South Hill. And on South Hill is Ithaca College. And on East Hill is Cornell. And I live on East Hill where Cornell is. Ithaca College is here. And then on West Hill is the hospital where my grandfather is. So I'm kind of on the East Hill looking over the lake at the West Hill, which I could do from my house. And me and my cousins go out there and we walk out. It was a beautiful summer day and we look out and there's a very specific lightning storm right over the hospital. And we all were like, what's going on with lightning strikes? And everything. And it was a beautiful summer day. This big black cloud over there. So we're like, oh my God, what's going on? We ran inside, told people, and they're like, yeah, big deal, you know. So we don't really think much. So my dad has to go and he goes to the hospital where my grandfather's now dead and he's going through his stuff. And when you are, you know, the stuff in your pocket, you know, and my grandfather was famous for carrying certain things, a little pen knife. As a matter of fact, he always gave us a pen knife. That was the thing. He had a pocket watch, a money clip, which I think I got because it said Blake Smith on it. And that's all that matters. But he kind of carried the same stuff all the time. And so when my father was bringing the stuff back, he looked and his pocket watch had stopped at exactly 5:05 p.m., exactly the time of his death. It was one of those watches you have to wind up, you know, to make it go. So it stopped at 5:05. I thought that was kind of weird. It stops at 5:05 p.m. on the exact time of his death. In fact, I've looked up the time of death. I kind of tried to find it. But so it appeared that, you know, this is kind of weird. No, that's kind of strange. So we had a big family and you could not fly back when the olden days. We couldn't afford it. So my mom, my dad, and my grandmother and the body and everybody else goes back to Austin, but the kids stayed behind. And my dad had this ceremony and my dad gave the eulogy and lots of people came. And they had gone back to his house. They went back to my grandfather's house. We went back to my grandfather's house and the story about the watch had taken place. And so apparently the watch was sitting there and my cousin comes up and she's like, did somebody touch this watch? Did somebody touch this watch? Because apparently this watch had begun running again once it had come in back to the house. So the watch had this kind of special thing and my brother still has this watch. So nothing really happens beyond that, except that, you know, it kind of becomes famous. A lot of people showed up for this wedding. I'm sorry, this funeral. Some famous people that you probably don't know, but they show up for the funeral and that's kind of it. And my grandmother lived for a couple more years besides that. So now the situation becomes that my eldest brother, Michael, is 8 years older than I am. All right. And he was born in Austin, Texas, which is where my grandfather lived. So my brother was one of those guys that hitchhiked across the country with a backpack on or was driving a Volkswagen Bug that, you know, that kind of thing. So he decides he's going to go down to Texas. So you think he took the Volkswagen Bug and he drives to Austin and he goes back to where he was born and goes and visits his godmother and that kind of stuff you do when you go back to where you were born. And so he's going around and trying to visit with different people and taking pictures. And he decides he wants to go and visit the gravesite of where my grandfather was buried. And so it's Austin has a big cemetery. So my brother Michael goes and he's driving around in his Volkswagen looking, can't find it. So he goes to the guy and the guy goes, well, it's right up in section whatever. It's right over there. It's easy to find. And my brother looks, he says, I can't find the thing. And he says, I just kind of got to this point where I was just, I'm going to give up. I'm not going to find this tombstone. So he starts to drive away and he says, and my brother is not a storyteller as much as I am. He says, all of a sudden I got this feeling like I just need to stop the car. And he says, he stops his Volkswagen and he looks over and it's clear as day. It's right in front of him. It says Blake Smith. He says, it's so obvious. How'd I miss it? I drove around and around and around. He says, I knew it was right there. It's so weird. So he gets out of the car and he walks up to the tombstone. He looks at it and he looks at his watch and it's 5:05 p.m. 5 years later. My brother said he saw the second hand like sweep across the 12. Kind of a thing. And he said, he's like, oh, because we had all known the 5:05 story, And so he like, of course tells the story all the time that the timing just couldn't have been. I mean, that's pretty weird coincidence for that 5:05 thing to happen exactly the right time. And again, I think my brother claims 5 o'clock, but I'm pretty sure 5:05, the song I was playing is, by the way, 5:15, if you're wondering, from The Who. So my brother comes back and he tells this story. All right. So we hear the story and we've heard these stories before. Oh, and I forgot to tell you a little bit about my grandfather. My grandfather was supposed to be a healer, okay? So those Baptist ministers that, you know, kind of do the healing thing. And there is some question whether he was, you know, I don't know how much he did it and stuff, but it was kind of this feeling like he had this, you know, he had a kind of connection with God. And what's interesting was there was a couple stories in which I heard that my grandfather had done some miraculous stuff. One of them, when he was younger, he woke up in the middle of the night, and this is apparently a true story, and told his wife, my grandmother, that his brother was in trouble. Doesn't matter. But one of his brothers was in trouble and he was in El Paso and he drove all the way from Austin to El Paso and found his brother pinned under a house. But he had this kind of premonition. My mother said that my grandfather rarely called my house, but every time she was walking out the door to have a baby, the phone would ring and he would say, Peggy, you okay? And he kind of had these kind of premonitions, right? So my brother I'm 11, right? So I grow up and I graduate from college and now it's been 10 years later. And I said, now I'm going to go on my cross country journey with my friend Todd. And we get in his Nissan Sentra and we start in Ithaca, New York, and we drive all across the country. We drive from all the way from Ithaca to Philadelphia. I worked there for a month for my brother-in-law. I drove all the way down to the Key West. I drove to New Orleans. I went to Arkansas and then I went to Texas on my way to California. Okay. So we go to Texas. So I said, Todd, we got to go see this thing. We got to go back to the spot. We got to go to the tombstone. But what was kind of interesting is that because I was Blake Smith, got all the Blake Smith stuff. All right. So all his papers and all the stuff that said Blake Smith on it, I might have one, you know, with the name on it. And I just got all this Blake Smith stuff. So when I went back to Austin, I brought things with me. I brought business cards. I brought a little envelope and stuff. And I'd done some research on my grandfather. I kind of knew him about him a little bit. And it was interesting because Baptists don't believe in smoking or drinking coffee or any kind of stimulants at all. And apparently my grandfather may have been a closet smoker and coffee drinker. And there was this, like, he had his own room in the back of this diner, and I actually found his waitress. Can you believe that? I went back and found, I asked around and everything, that he had this, like, place he would go back so he could have a coffee and smoke, because that was kind of uncool. He didn't do that. But in the 40s, everybody smoked. 50s, everybody smoked. You ever watch 50s TV? Everybody. So I go back and visit there too. So I go with my friend Todd, and my dad says to me, he goes, here's what you got to do. He goes, go to the church and just tell them your name is Blake Smith. And I was like, oh, Dad, I don't want to do that. He goes, no, I promise you, just go tell them. Tell him your name is Blake Smith. So I said, all right, I'll do it. So my friend and I, Todd, go there. We go to the church. We walk in. I knock on the door, and I said, hi, I just wanted to, my grandfather used to be the minister here. And I just thought, could I walk around, take some pictures, and maybe look around? And the woman goes, well, of course. She goes, what was your grandfather's name? And I said, well, his name was Blake Smith. And the woman, like, looks at me like, I never had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Smith, but I swear it was the first name I heard when I came to Austin. She's like spewing this. And she reaches out and she grabs my hand. And it's kind of a Southern woman thing, and does the hand on top, and she ain't letting go. So she was kind of holding me, like, as if I was like, and she was like holding on my hand and like leading me in and wouldn't let go. Everyone, Blake Smith is here. You know, kind of like that. And the funniest thing was, my friend Todd is nobody. Like, they're totally blowing him off. He's just, all of a sudden it's like, I've got some kind of power or something like that. And they're leading me around and talking to all these people And so I talked to all these people. And they kind of look at me funny, you know? And I'm like, and one interesting thing, there's a story about my grandfather, which has been kind of refuted recently by my uncle, but I like the story, is that my grandfather, now remember, Baptists are kind of hellfire and brimstone. They get into it a little bit, you know, a little responsorial, a little excitement and stuff. And apparently my grandfather at one time fell into the baptismal font, which is a pool that's up on the altar. And my uncle claims that he didn't really fall in, that he stumbled and fell when he was baptizing somebody, but I've heard he fell into the baptismal font. And my dad, who is now passed, he says that whatever happened, it was kind of funny because my grandfather apparently, and you know what's interesting about you guys is I took Mr. Schaff and Mr. Horn, and we stood right in there, and Mr. Stola, we were in there. I took him to the font. I stood right next to him. I said, there it is. We went to Austin. And there's actually this little lip there to catch the water. I'm wondering if he tripped on it. But my dad says that he goes into the water, and he's full gone. And there's a full church full of people. And my grandfather was a little bit balding here. And he goes into the water. And he goes into the water and goes down. And everybody's like, you know, wondering what happened to us. And my grandfather stands up with my dad said he had yinkles, like, you know, when a bald person's hair hangs in their face. He comes up with water and he says, let us pray. You like this, and so everybody starts laughing because he's all covered in wetness. So they kind of have to stop the show. So we actually went back and checked it out, and remember that story, went in. And it was funny because my friend Todd is like, we also walked in, right? We went in, and there's this entire huge thing to my grandfather, all these pictures, and my dad when he was young, and my older brother when he was a baby, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So it was no big deal about the 5:05 p.m. thing. Nothing really happened or whatever. So we met the people, they finally let me go, and we took off, and I went to a couple places, but one of the places, of course, I had to go to the tombstone. So I find the tombstone, no problems at all. I went there, took my picture next to Blake Smith, I freaked some people out because I took out some Blake Smith cards and put them there. Actually took a matchbook from the place he used to hang out, sat there, took a picture and left it there. And so that was no here nor there. But remember, I'm still on my journey west. So I've done my Austin thing, and we're deciding, it's the middle of, it was summertime, June, July, I can't remember. But we're going to drive across West Texas. And West Texas is famous for being hot. And so we're getting ready to take off. And our idea was that we're going to drive through the night because there would be less sun. It wouldn't be as hot. And I think we had air conditioning. We must have had air conditioning. But maybe we didn't. It was a brand new Nissan Sentra. But remember, this is 1985. All right. So we decide we're going to go at night. So we leave my grandfather's cemetery. And off we go in our red Nissan Sentra, and we drove buzzing across the Texas. Now it's flat, it's dry. East Texas is nice, but West Texas is desert. So we're driving, and we take off, and the sun begins to set. And Todd and I are driving across this thing trying to stay awake, all right? And the sun is setting, and all of a sudden it gets dark. And lo and behold, a storm blows up. And this storm, it's not a lightning storm per se, it's a heat lightning storm. If you've ever seen heat lightning, it doesn't make noise. And so we're driving, on this hugely flat desert, about 75 miles an hour with our foot on the floor on this Nissan Sentra trying to get through this place. And there's this storm blowing in. And every time what it does is that the clouds all around, they go pink, 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 pink. And then this massive electrical bolt would come to the ground without a sound, with no noise. And we watch pink, 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 boom, but no noise, quiet. But these unbelievable lightning things that would like light up the car, almost blind us in the car. And it was so unbelievable. You can ask Todd. It was so unbelievable that we got out, we stopped the car, we pulled over, and I got out like an Instamatic camera, which is, you don't know what that is, but it's like this camera, you just push a button, it takes a picture. And I took like, it's like, you know, the ones you throw away, those throwaway cameras, like one of those. I took pictures of trying to get the lightning and took, you know, 16 pictures of black because I could never quite catch it. But it was so unbelievably good, this lightning, that I got hoarse from yelling, "Did you see that one?" I mean, all night long, 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. It just didn't stop. Hours of it. Boom, boom. Never seemed to stop. But no noise, totally quiet. But these beautiful, unbelievable lightning that would go across the sky like this way. Boom, you know, across the sky, like this strange stuff all around. So we drive all night, we get tired, we pull over, Texas State Trooper, boys, you're gonna have to move along. So we drive along, we take off, we keep driving, driving, we're tired. And when you're going across the country back in the olden days, what we would do is, you guys know AAA, well, you get these things called AAA books. In the AAA book, it would just tell you about every little town. And you go, Canajoharie, look it up, and it would tell what Canajoharie had. So we go, we're headed toward Carlsbad Caverns, which, by the way, if you ever get a chance, you got to go to Carlsbad Caverns. Unbelievable. Biggest caverns in America. It's stunning. So we're going to go and see Carlsbad Caverns. So we're driving there. But we get in, the sun comes up. We've been driving all night, and we pull into like this parking lot. But what we had done was, when you're traveling across country and you're trying to save money and you don't want to pay for camping, you find showers. And the place where they have showers is always public pools. So we would always look up who has a public pool. And you pay 50 cents to go swim in the pool and take a shower and shave. Little kids looking at you, why are you in here? But we find this one. So we found, oh, perfect. This is a perfect place. So we kind of pull over and we stop, and we're kind of tired, and we're looking out, and we're going, what are we going to do? And it's, you know what? We're hungry. Let's go eat before we clean up. So we're looking at this swimming area stuff and checking it out. We see where the bathrooms are and stuff. And let's go eat. So we go back. We get back to his car, and his car goes click, 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 click. What? No, nothing. Click, 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 click. And we're like, what? What click, click? It's a brand new car. And I'm in New Mexico, about as far as I can be from home. And we don't have credit cards, all right? No credit cards. No cell phones, all right? So we're like, uh-oh, this is bad. We have traveler's checks and things like that. We have money. But we don't have, you know, emergency stuff like that. So we're like, oh, what are we going to do about this? So we're like, I don't know. I don't even think about cars. We're kind of thinking about it. We kind of step out of the car, and we're just kind of standing there wondering what we're going to do about it. And just about that time, I'm talking to my friend Todd. Todd will tell you if he ever calls me. Look up. I'm talking to him. We're kind of figuring out what we're going to do. I said, we're going to have to walk into town and get a, you know, talk to somebody, go to a gas station or something, figure it out. So I'm sitting there talking to him. And all of a sudden, I hear this, help, help me, help. And I'm like, what? Help. And I look over, and there's this guy in that water that we're going to be swimming in who is drowning in the middle of the pond. And it's not a pond. It's like a dammed up river. And it's black, and it's not good for clearness. And it's got this giant slide, which you'll see here. We were jumping and playing later. So we hear, help me, help me. So immediately I blow off Todd, and I start running up to this edge. And I walk up to the edge of the water. I'm like, come on, man, swim. Swim, come on, you can do it. He's like, I can't, I can't. I said, yes, you can. We're kicking off our shoes. You know, take our shoes. Come on, swim, come on. He's like, no, I can't. He starts going down. So both Todd and I go, whoosh. And we dive out there, and we grab him. We get him. And if you guys are lifeguards, there's something called the tug. And the tug is this feel you get when you get him. He's going down and I can remember the tug. I remember that feeling. And we pull him back up, and he's like, duh, duh, duh. And we drag him. We plop him up on the side. And it turned out he was drunk. He was a drunken biker or something like that. Decided to swim across the river like an idiot. And his friend was like, I told you not to do that, you know. And so we had saved this guy. I mean, he was definitely going to go to the bottom. It was dark. I mean, it was this black water. And we dragged him up onto the thing. And it was a very strange thing because there were people all around there. But it was as if we weren't there. Nobody patted us on the back, said thank you. There were people like cooking, you know, in the grill, and nothing really happened. And we went from being – it was almost immediately where we had just saved them. We're kind of drying ourselves off. And it was like as we had not been there. And we go back to the car and went, whoom, and it started right up. So if that car starts, that guy's at the bottom of that lake. All right. So we kind of, it was just this amazing event. And from this point onward, right, that's what I told you about the end of the story. The story just kind of ends after that one. There's no more connection with me. But I always wondered all those connections between Lightning and me and why that car didn't start and why I saved this guy who I didn't know, any of them. I'll just pull him out. And the fact that it was weird, like I was almost like not there. It was like people didn't recognize me. No, nice job or well done or thanks for saving him. It was like you were just kind of like there to do that particular job. And then it kind of ended. So we continue our trip, by the way. We continue our trip. We go all the way across the country. We do California. We ran out of money. We ran out of money in Long Beach, California. Ended up getting a job. His brother-in-law got us a job. We built a fence around an apartment complex. They paid us minimum wage. We took our money. They said, boy, you guys are good workers. You want to work anymore? No. And we got in the car and we spent whatever money we had. And the one thing I always remember is, and it dates me a little, is that you know how I said there's no cell phones, no credit cards? Well, I had a tax return check from not Andrew Cuomo, but Mario Cuomo, his dad, Mario Cuomo, and a tax return check for $150. And the rule was, I said to Todd, if I ever have to cash this check, we got to go home. That was the rule. So we had to work, but I always had $150 that I had. I could go cash that check if I had to, but I never had to. So we were able to kind of make our way all the way across the country and then back up into Montana, all the way across. And I will tell ultimately another story about the Todd and I trip, but we ended up driving all the way from South Dakota to New York State in one day. It took about a day and a half or something like that. So that's basically that story in 26 and 11 minutes. Are there any questions that come from the audience? Let me go back to my group here. My poor boy Todd never showed up. Let me see if I can call him. Any questions out there, although I can't hear you? Type them in if you want.
Was it 5:05 p.m. when the car didn't start?
No, I did not notice that. I'm not sure. To be honest, I can't tell you. No, it was not, because it was in the morning. It was definitely in the morning because we had driven all night. We were hungry. So that's why we went back to the car. But remember, I had driven the car all day. We drive through the night. The car was fine. I wondered if it was some kind of like a vapor lock or something, you know, I don't know. We tried to come up with some reason why, but, and since then, by the way, as I pointed out to you, we went back to that church. I took both Mr. Schaff, Mr. Horner, Mr. Stoll, we all went back in there, met the woman. And in fact, my original intent, cause we went to a conference, our whole group, my original intent was to, take my portrait, that one there, which was given to me by my aunt, to give it to them in Austin. And I was going to go on the plane. And the woman got back in touch with me and said, no, it's okay. I got one of those. So that's why it's still here. And that's another episode of Stories Past, a collection of personal experiences that I've told to my students over the last 4 decades. I've chosen these stories because they were funny, inspirational, or maybe amazing. Please keep a lookout for more upcoming episodes or go back and binge the stories you missed if you want. This is Blake Smith, and you've just been told one of my stories past.